nose turret or the tail gunner turret. They can sit at the bomb site or at the radio man's position. They can move forward or aft on the catwalk, see the bombs in their rack or the oxygen tanks, and everything else. On the B-24, the waste windows are open. In flight, wind streams flow through the planes to the tail. Although Hugh and I went up only a couple thousand feet above the ground on a lovely October day in central Pennsylvania from Williamsport to Harrisburg, it was cold. The flights in the big craft were bumpy, noisy, and a perfect delight. Flying the B-24 and the B-17 from the co-pilot's seat, even in smooth weather, little winds, few clouds, made you and me realize how cumbersome those bombers are, how long it takes for them to respond to the controls, how difficult they are to turn. But the flying brought smiles to our faces and joy to our hearts, smiles as big as all outdoors and joy as deep as the ocean. It was an experience with machines that could be compared only to being at the controls of a locomotive going up the Sierra Nevada. And it increased beyond measurement our respect for and admiration of the pilots and crews who flew those planes on combat missions that lasted 6, 8, or 10 hours. We encountered no flak. There were no enemy fighters shooting at us. We don't know how the airmen did it, but we appreciate what they did even more than before.
Prologue. The B-24 was built like a 1930s Mack truck, except that it had an aluminum skin that could be cut with a knife. It could carry a heavy load far and fast, but it had no refinements. Steering the four-engine airplane was difficult and exhausting, as there was no power except the pilot's muscles. It had no windshield wipers, so the pilot had to stick his head out the side window to see during a rain. Breathing was possible only by wearing an oxygen mask, cold and clammy, smelling of rubber and sweat, above 10,000 feet in altitude. There was no heat, despite temperatures that, at 20,000 feet and higher, got as low as 40 or even 50 degrees below zero. The wind blew through the airplane like fury, especially from the waste gunner's windows and whenever the bomb bay doors were open. The oxygen mask often froze to the wearer's face. If the men at the waste touched their machine guns with bare hands, the skin froze to the metal. There were no bathrooms. To urinate, there were two small relief tubes, one forward and one aft, which were almost impossible to use without spilling because of the heavy layers of clothing the men wore, plus which the tubes were often clogged with frozen urine. Defecating could be done only in a receptacle lined with a wax paper bag. A man had to be desperate to use it because of the difficulty of removing enough clothing and exposing bare skin to the Arctic cold. The bags were dropped out of the waste windows or through the open bomb bay doors. There were no kitchen facilities, no way to warm up food or coffee. But anyway, there was no food, unless a crew member had packed in a sea ration or a sandwich. With no pressurization, pockets of gas in a man's intestinal tract could swell like balloons and cause him to double over in pain. There was no aisle to walk down, only the 8-inch-wide catwalk running beside the bombs and over the bomb bay doors used to move forward and aft. It had to be done with care, as the aluminum doors, which rolled up into the fuselage instead of opening outward on a hinge, had only 100-pound capacity. So if a man slipped, he would break through. The seats were not padded.